Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
I'm quite confident that in the long term, that basically the truth will out.
Dr. Ira Leifer joins us to talk about his assessment as part of the government's flow rate technical group, analyzing the amount of oil spewing into the Gulf of Mexico from the BP Transocean spill.
And BP, which is able to afford a great number of attorneys, can just simply overwhelm the federal government with its legal representation.
Then former EPA investigator Scott West joins us to go over BP's history of criminal negligence and catastrophe. We look at the problem of getting good information from BP or the government as a pattern has been forming. BP tries to disperse public concern, offering low numbers. The Obama administration reinforces them. In May, NPR's Richard Harris asked Dr. Stephen Worley, a researcher at Purdue University, to study the videotape of the oil flowing out of the pipe and use his technique for calculating flow rate from speed of particle movement.
We're talking more than a factor of 10 difference between what I calculate and the number that's being thrown around.
BP had said 5,000 barrels of oil were flowing from the pipe per day. Worley told NPR the flow rate was more like 70,000 barrels a day. Other researchers also got the much higher numbers. At a press conference June 9th, the National Incident Commander on the spill, Admiral Thad Allen, said between 19 and 25,000 gallons were coming out of the pipe per day at this point.
We have a bunch of technical experts got together and they came up with two ranges, 12 to 19 and 12 to 25,000. Until we get better data, that becomes the rebuttable assumptions we're making on flow and everything else.
That after the pipe has been sheared to accommodate a containment cap. The company had trapped 15,000 barrels during the previous 24-hour period, he said, and hoped to double that in the coming weeks. But again, NPR wanted more clear information. Where were the numbers coming from, BP or the government?
My knowledge was it was a task group, but I will check back, and if I misunderstood it, I'll make a clarification on it. They're going to be looking at that again. They have high-resolution video that was taken after the riser pipe was cut. That's been brought back on hard disk, and that's exactly what the group is analyzing right now.
When we spoke with one of the technical experts working for the government's team, Dr. Ira Leifer, he confirmed his assessment based on BP's own data that the flow could be more like their worst-case scenario of 100,000 barrels a day. We asked him to confirm the reports in McClatchy and then Reuters, citing the 100,000 figure.
Let me just say what I had intended to say, which is that in the absence of good quality data, which was our situation until very recently, the flow clearly had increased significantly. The question is how much? And there are two ways to go about that. One is you get data and you analyze it. That's called science. The other way was to just take BP's own estimate of a worst-case scenario of freely flowing pipe and just put that out there. This is what BP thinks would happen when a pipe freely flows from that reservoir. And that pipe, I mean the pipe that is the problem with this well, into the ocean, and BP's number was 100,000 barrels per day. Does not mean that I think 100,000 barrels per day is flowing out. It could be less, it could be more. The whole point of science and being a scientist and the agencies working on this and the people is to actually come up with a number. And again, previously BP was very reticent about providing data, not letting us do our work. Now they have become much more helpful and forward looking in providing the data. I assume they suddenly realized that they don't like their own number very much, and they'd actually finally like for us to be able to come up with a good number.
Well, Dr. Leifer, we heard this morning from Admiral Thad Allen that BP captured 15,000 barrels overnight in 24 hours. That still leaves 85,000, according to your estimation.
I'll just point out again, it's BP's worst-case scenario. So the question is the flow from that well worst case? Is it even worse than that, or is it not as bad? So what I would argue from looking at the videos is however much oil is coming out, it's large enough relative to 15,000 that they've not made an appreciable dent in it. That means it's certainly more than double that, and the amount is something that we should be able to figure out within a day or so from the new data. So the amount of oil that still remains to be captured could be conceivably within another their expansion to 30,000 total, but it also could be larger. And this is where we need to know by analyzing data. And I think what has come out of having the discussion expanded to include BP's own worst-case scenario is that they are much more cooperative and forward-looking now and helpful so that we can actually do our job so that the efforts that go on are done safely.
And, of course, NOAA is testing deeper samples of water to try to discover oil there. But why is it so difficult to assess this? And does it have to do with the Corexit, the Nalco product that was used to disperse the oil? And if so, would that affect the tests that are now being sent to laboratories like Alpha here in New England?
The challenge is it's hard enough to figure out where the oil is going to go at the sea surface, where you actually can look at it from an airplane or a boat and track it. In the three dimensions of the ocean, it is far more difficult challenge to find where it has gone. The other is that the ocean is vast. If the oil is dispersed throughout the water column, that's the idea behind dispersants, then the concentration goes down to very small amounts. That does not have anything to say with whether or not those very small amounts are problematic to the ecosystem. Very small amounts of petroleum hydrocarbons in the water column are known to cause all sorts of problems with fish and so on. But because the amounts are so small, they're hard to find. It's not easy to find when something gets so diluted. And there was a lot of work was done on this particular aspect after the Exxon Valdez, because scientists were, in fact, able to take a look at the effect on fish and other life forms in the ocean from the petroleum hydrocarbons that were still seeping even years later from the sediments into the water column.
Well, we were concerned when one of NOAA's tests turned out to establish that there was a similarity between oil they found at more than 3,000 feet down and the oil spewing from the spill, but then a later follow-up test, they couldn't establish that. Then we read that there may be a conflict of interest with the labs, or that even BP is doing some of these tests themselves.
In that regard, I'm quite confident that in the long term, that basically the truth will out. It is not possible for anyone to have a complete control of all the oil samples from the ocean. And I think the laboratories know that if they did not do a very high quality analysis, that other entities with own boats collecting water samples would very rapidly be releasing information that would be in contradiction to their laboratory. And the one thing that these laboratories value above everything else is their reputation. And I would imagine that in order to protect their reputation, they would, realizing that other people will also be collecting and analyzing water samples, would be very honest in their regards. I certainly can't promise that, but I imagine that they would want to do that because this is such a large spill. There are so many people who are going to be trying to understand what happened and so on, that you can't hide things for very long when so many people are looking.
Dr. Ira Liefer is a well-known scholar at the Marine Science Institute of the University of California. You're listening to Talk Nation Radio. I'm Dory Smith. We turn now to Scott West, an EPA agent in the criminal division. He took calls from workers complaining that BP's pipeline in Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, was vulnerable.
What I did with EPA, I was a criminal investigator with the Criminal Investigation Division, and in Seattle, I was the special agent in charge up until I retired in October of 2008. The state of Alaska fell under my area of responsibility, and in 2005, I received information from some employees working on the north slope up at Prudhoe Bay that a particular transit line was full of sludge, and they had grave concerns about corrosion causing the pipeline to rupture. They had brought these concerns to their officials, supervisors and other officials at BP, and they were ignored and even chastised. So they came to me, and there wasn't much we could do until March of 2006, when that pipeline did indeed rupture and caused the second largest oil spill in Alaska. We started a criminal investigation immediately and carried forth for the next year and a half. It was a robust investigation, enjoying a great deal of support by the EPA and the Department of Justice. And then unexpectedly, in August of 2007, I was informed that the Justice Department had decided to grant BP's wishes to settle this case, along with a case involving a explosion at a BP refinery in Texas City and a propane trading violation in Chicago. They wanted to wrap these all up together. And so the Justice Department shut down my investigation, worked out a misdemeanor plea with the company for the Alaska case, and that was that. And so when the rig exploded in the Gulf, and then once I found out it was BP rig, I felt that nothing had changed within the criminal corporate culture that we had found, and indeed that this was no accident, it was a result of criminal decisions.
And of course, the U.S. Justice Department, once again, investigating British Petroleum. We're reading about a lot of
money. They're not investigating British Petroleum.
Okay, correct me.
Yeah, the Attorney General last Tuesday came out publicly and under, I believe, pressure that's been coming on from the public about why isn't there a criminal investigation. And he made the statement that indeed there is an investigation, and he cited the statutes that one would expect, Clean Water Act, Rivers and Harbors, or the Refuse Act, and the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. Now, short of calling the Attorney General a liar, I'm going to say he practiced the art of deception. There is an investigation underway by Department of Interior, Office of Inspector General, having to do with some improprieties at Mines and Mineral Service. And by all logic, the EPA Criminal Investigation Division has indeed gone into the computer system and officially opened a file for an investigation into BP. But in terms of there being an actual investigation underway, there is none.
Let's talk about first the Prudhoe Bay spill and then Texas, because I know by the time the Texas spill happened, you were already aware of safety violations. Walk us through the series of events.
Well, that's correct. And because the corporation was charged, the only things you can do to a corporation is take money away from it and put it under scrutiny. Corporations, though, do not make the decisions that led to these events. Individuals within them do. And what had been my aim, using the criminal tool, had been to carry the investigation to the point where we could determine if we could charge individuals for those decisions. And that's what we wanted to do, was to hold individuals accountable, and hopefully that would change the corporate culture. A $20 million fine, which is ultimately what BP had to pay, it was $12 million in fine and then $8 million in restitution, but essentially it was a $20 million deal, is a rounding error when you look at the amount of money that they pulled off the slope, and then certainly worldwide. It wasn't enough to get their attention. And they were, at that time, had already been convicted of felony hazardous waste violations up on the North Slope. And then with the Texas City, also a Clean Air Act, they became serial environmental criminals.
What were some of the aspects of the Prudhoe Bay, Alaska spill that BP did wrong that, you know, contributed to the disaster happening in the first place?
It was the cost-cutting and ignoring the concerns raised by its own engineers that was the problem.
And how could this leak have gone on for a number of days undetected by this company?
Well, they operate a quite elaborate system of leak detection equipment, and they are quite known for having false reports all the time. And so the alarm goes off, and it's summarily ignored. And that's what happened here. The alarms were going off, and because they'd gone off so often, they weren't paid much attention. And it wasn't until one of the workers was driving down one of the roads along the pipeline, and he actually smelt crude. And so he got out and looked around, and that's how the leak was discovered.
Can you explain where the criminal negligence was in that case?
The criminal negligence was in the fact that the company was not following industry standard practices in terms of maintaining that pipeline. They had internal knowledge from their own employees and experts that they had a serious problem. They chose to ignore that problem, saying that they didn't have the money to address it and it was low on their priority list. They had other concerns, this sort of thing. That's how you get from an unfortunate series of events turns into criminality when people who have a responsibility to keep up with these things fail to do so.
And then let's go to Texas, where BP, again, their plant blew up, right? I believe it was 15 workers killed and 170 injured. That, of course, also linked to safety violations at their facility. Again, they got placed on probation, pretty much walked away, and went on to deep ocean drilling.
Well, that's correct. I wasn't involved in the investigation into Texas City, but I was talking to my counterparts who were, and we found an awful lot of similarities between BP operating in Alaska and then BP operating at that refinery in Texas City. And it was a whole host of cutting corners, saving money, trying to stretch every penny, which is very difficult to understand when you look at the size of the profits that this company was making worldwide and continues to make worldwide, as to why they would risk these catastrophic events for nickels and dimes. But yet they do, and they did. And now we're seeing that the same sort of behavior most likely led to what happened out on the Gulf.
The Deepwater Horizon explosion in April, there was someone killed on board that rig, and he had been very concerned. His name is Jason Anderson. He was a rig manager, and prior to dying, had spoken to people about his concerns, was shut down by the industry. They were in a hurry. Why don't you take it from there?
Well, you know, I certainly wasn't on the rig, and I did not speak to Mr. Anderson at any time prior to his death. But what you've just told me is certainly consistent with what I've learned about BP when I was investigating them criminally up in Alaska, and what my counterparts found in Texas City, is that time is money, they're always in a hurry, and workers' concerns are often ignored. And more so than ignored, many workers fear retaliation for speaking out. They certainly watched a number of their friends get fired or blacklisted from the industry for raising concerns. And then it was also something that we saw, that BP would often blame the dead guy. And I don't mean to be crude here, but that was a reference that some employees shared with us, and that's how they put it, is that when something went terribly wrong and there were deaths, it was often the company's way to say that the individuals that were hurt or killed had done something at fault.
And what about BP's response to accusations of criminal negligence? I assume, given the way they lobby in Congress, that they came up with a very bold plan to counter such charges.
Well, they did, but the fact remains that they pled guilty in Alaska to negligence, which led to the rupture of that pipe and the discharge of that oil into the tundra. They pled guilty to felony Clean Air Act in Texas City, which led to the explosion and then the death of those workers. They pled guilty in Alaska earlier to illegally handling hazardous waste. Now, there's only so much they can claim when indeed they come into a courtroom and plead guilty to these crimes. But there's another thing to look at here, and I don't totally blame BP. They are, from my experience, the worst of the oil companies operating in the United States. But I blame the Department of Justice for being so lenient with BP in the past that has allowed them to believe that they can continue to operate this way without sanction.
Now, Scott West, you're making these charges as a retired special agent in charge at the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. You worked in the Department of Intelligence and Investigations. What is that?
That's for Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. It's a non-government entity, but we enforce international law on the high seas, marine conservation law, where other nations fail to do so. And so bringing in a criminal investigative element was a move on the part of Captain Paul Watson to strengthen what we do in terms of dealing with crimes on the seas.
Financial concerns were really on the minds of many of the politicians who, for years, argued in favor of drilling in the Anwar drilling up in Alaska in the ocean, you know, and also on the North Slope. People up there needing jobs, needing money, were divided over whether or not this was a good idea. But talk about the environmental risks, first of all, from these big oil pipeline systems and then from deep water drilling, and what that means to us as citizens of this planet.
We've certainly seen the risk from deep water drilling. There's no question about that. And then also these major pipelines that carry the oil, and of course with the Exxon Valdez, the ships that carry this oil. they are inherently dangerous, inherently pose significant environmental risks. However, there is a great deal of technology out there that, if employed properly, can reduce those risks considerably. This is what's causing me the most concern with this particular company, is that by my experience investigating them, and then certainly what we're seeing in the Gulf, is that they're not taking advantage of that technology.
We heard from attorney Patty Goldman last week of Earth Justice that their complaint now in litigation is that BP did not provide the government minerals mining management with an adequate plan to deal with a blowout scenario like the one that happened.
And what you're suggesting is that the regulators failed in doing their job in ensuring that the operators followed the law. And I think that that's probably an accurate assessment. I was never involved in the regulatory side of these rigs, and certainly not the Deepwater Horizon. So we'll have to see what comes out of that. But I would not be at all surprised if we find that there was inadequate oversight, that people either chose to look the other way or simply were not qualified to even understand what was being presented to them in these documents.
Just summarize the EPA and how it works and what does or does not work about it.
That's a big question. I worked for the EPA for just under 19 years, the entire time as a criminal investigator. You know, it's a large bureaucracy. It certainly has issues related to that. But I do have to admit that I did find it to be quite effective, at least from my perspective and what I was doing. I was proud to work there, and I felt it was a good use of my time and talent towards protecting the environment. I did run into some concerns with the Alaska case when my own management failed to back me up and fell into lockstep with Department of Justice. I did have some concerns back shortly after 9/11 when within the criminal program it seemed to forget all about protecting the environment and wanted to jump on the bandwagon of Homeland Security. But a lot of those issues, I understand, have been resolved or at least are being addressed significantly. So in terms of how the greater part of the agency functions, you know, that was kind of on the other side of the door from where I was as a criminal investigator.
As it turns out, BP was fined for their Texas operation, $87.5 million. It was the largest fine in agency history for a failure to repair potential safety hazards. And they also issued notifications, 270 of them, plus another 449 willful violations. There you're talking about worker safety.
Correct.
And so what's the difference, essentially, in terms of the enforcement capacity of either EPA or OSHA today?
Well, different sets of regulations, but we can look at how the EPA, the civil side of the house, has been able to address the conditions that and the actual results of the oil spill in Alaska. They would certainly have been trying to bring about fines, and BP, which is able to afford a great number of attorneys, can just simply overwhelm the federal government with its legal representation and essentially just tie it up in court for years. The EPA is still trying to get some kind of civil resolution to the oil spill of 2006 up on the slope, and the BP attorneys just seem to keep overwhelming them and bullying them in meeting after meeting, and it's not going anywhere. So that's of concern to me.
How can an agency that's had two instances of being put on probation...
Three.
Oh, okay, now three. Well, how can they move on to do this deep ocean drilling at this incredible depth? I think it's 5,000 feet. And the Bush administration and the MMS, Minerals Management Agency, they gave them permission.
Well, you know, we'd have to ask those officials. Those are the ones that grant the permission for the drilling, and they need to be quizzed as to, with this abysmal criminal record, environmental criminal record, and worker safety record, why was not more care taken to ensure that things were being done right before they granted those permits? That's where you'll have to go for that answer.
How is it that a company like Nalco, that manufactured the dispersant used in the Gulf of Mexico to treat this oil spill, was able to pollute in Texas? They left Superfund sites behind, and then move on to this position of incredible responsibility to deal with the biggest environmental disaster in U.S. history.
Well, I mean, that is troubling, and we should all be concerned about that. And one of the vehicles available to the EPA or any federal agency is a program called debarment. And this is when a company is doing business with the United States and has proven to be unscrupulous or criminal. The United States has the ability to take a look at that company and say, do we want to continue to do business with it or not? And that way they could deny contracts or end contracts, that sort of thing. So we'd certainly have to ask the question of, was debarment considered for a company that caused all of these Superfund problems? Was it allowed to continue to operate and have contracts with the government? Another thing that I often saw was that these companies would often have subsidiaries and facility-specific issues that did not affect their more global or national operations, so that we may need to look at how the laws are written and applied to prevent this type of thing from happening in the future.
Well, right, NALCO appears to have been successful at making toxic air, land, and sea at this point in their life as a corporation, and a very broad one in energies. But some countries don't allow them to use these dispersants. They don't feel that they're safe. Just tell us your thoughts about whether or not this practice should continue. I mean, there are thousands of ocean drills. We don't know how many are at this kind of depth, how many are planned, or any of those details, right?
Right, and I could only speak to that as a private citizen. I never had any exposure from my work inside the EPA with these sorts of things. And my first response is certainly of concern, grave concern about this, because spills on the land are horrendous enough, but a gusher like this in the water is catastrophic. So I have grave concerns. At the same time, though, I realize that until we really put in a different energy system in this country, in this world, we're going to continue to demand oil. So my hope is that, one, we can move to something better, but in the meantime, ensure that every conceivable contingency is dealt with and not glossed over and ignored.
And Scott West, where can people go to learn more about this? I know I read your name in a story by Jason Leopold. It appeared in truthout.org, and he's been breaking stories. I've seen a few in Bloomberg about Jason Anderson. We've seen some in a new PBS show, you know, Need to Know. Give us a few examples of places where people should be looking for information.
Well, it's specific to the question of why is there not a criminal investigation underway. You can certainly go to a Facebook page that my wife started a couple weeks ago, and it's an open group. You don't have to be a Facebook member to view the page, but it's called BP, Beyond Prosecution. And there we try to pull together articles and interviews that are directly related to this question. In terms of the other issues, surprisingly, and no one I think was more surprised than me when I got a call from Fox News to come on and talk with them. And I found they were quite receptive to what I had to say, even more so than some of the more mainstream news outlets that I have encountered. But so far, I think Truth Out has been working the hardest to deal with these questions and these issues. So that's certainly a resource for your listeners.
Anything that we didn't ask you that you'd like to add?
No, I think you've covered it pretty well. Thank you.
You can find former EPA official Scott West at his Facebook page, BP, Beyond Prosecution. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut. We're syndicated with Pacifica Network, talknationradio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions, talknationradio@gmail.com if you'd like to write to us. Our music is by Fritz Heed.